so much.
Mary Doesn't Tweet gave it 9 out of 10 double S's.
Double
smirking
S's.
Sansa's.
Oh, she smirked.
Oh, that was so good.
You know what? She smirked at the death. She's going to smirk at the funeral. She's going to smirk when the dogs pass
the
Ramsay's
whole
remains.
Time. Oh, my God.
That should have been, it should have been 10 out of 10 double R's Ramsay's remains.
I've been very busy. Many important matters require king's attention. I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
your fingers or your
king.
Doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plan.
I am
super girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can reach me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I am Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67. Always putting it to CJGman66. You're nothing tonight. You're like Ramsay. Nothing.
Oh, man, that is tough. So, tonight we're going to be breaking down episode 9 of season 6 of HBO's Game of Thrones, based on George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire saga. Catfish, we normally jump into our ratings out of 10, but I want to say this before we even get going.
Let's talk about it.
So we saw what I like to call a double S.
Double S.
A special screening tonight.
It was special.
Which might affect our ratings. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody about how you and I saw Battle of the Bastards tonight.
All right. Well, I'm a member of the Television Academy, so I get to vote for the Emmys.
Right.
And because of that, because they want you to vote for their stuff, they set up all these nice screenings. Tonight was supposed to be, we were supposed to have a little introduction by Benioff and the director of tonight's episode. Now, Benioff was apparently stuck in Atlanta, your hometown.
My hometown, Atlanta, ATL.
So we didn't get to hear from him. We got a little talk from the director, but really there was nothing special I can really say about it. He didn't give us any special information, no inside information.
No.
David did, as Dadsy said, David blew us off.
David blow us off?
Yeah.
Let me say, Dan Weiss, mm-hmm. The one thing he did say is he pointed out, and we actually figured this out before he announced it, is that the crowd, not only was it with Television Academy members, it was packed.
A lot
with
of
people,
HBO people.
HBO people, but also people who work on the show. And so he had people stand up. He said, hey, if you are part of the crew, if you work on Game of Thrones, I want to stand up and salute you. So they all stood up, and the whole auditorium gave them applause. It was really good.
Now, we did have some comments from our listeners.
Yeah.
Who said Bertuzzi says the Falcons suck except for in the Vale. So that is good to know.
That will be edited out. You wonder why I'm up till 1 a.m. editing this podcast.
All right. So because of that, even though we didn't get any special information, it was in a really beautiful theater with a huge screen with great audio, and it was packed.
And this was a raucous crowd.
Oh,
my
God.
They were going crazy.
The cheering was – there was so much cheering.
The laughter.
The
were laughing like crazy.
Lots of laughing. There was clapping. It was
– there was a standing ovation at the end.
This was the episode to see on a big screen with a crowd who loved it.
Yeah, and it – let me tell you, at the end, after the standing ovation, after everybody clapped, somebody shouted out, it was brilliant, somebody shouted out, show it again!
Show it again,
it was so funny. Everybody laughed. It was.
I would have sat through it again.
Yeah.
For sure, on that screen.
Okay, so you say that, Catfish. Let's hear it. What are you going to give?
Someone asked, what was the most exciting part for the crowd?
Yeah.
There was so much going on, but I would say the applause as Sansa walked away with the smirk on her face. People were so, just as I was excited for Sansa to come into her own, people were so thrilled Sansa finally got it over on Ramsay Bolton. I mean, on Bolton. So I am going to give it.
Yeah.
Now, again, we said we might go a little bit high.
Right.
However, I'm going to give this 10. I don't know whether it's because of the big screen. I'm going to give it 10 what I like to call double Bs.
Double Bs?
Yeah, Bolton bites. Yeah. He's like, Bolton's niblets are the best.
Bolton bits?
The Bolton bits. Yeah, the Bolton bites. It was the dogs they were given the Bolton bites.
Right. We don't know what happened to Karstark, but it could have been Karstark kibbles and Bolton bits.
Oh, my God. I don't know whether I would have given it a different rating, having seen it at home. It was so thrilling and heart-pounding. The battle.
Oh, yeah.
Was crazy. The horses bashing into each other. You know, John almost died a few times. And then when he was stuck in the middle of all those people, I mean, this was thrilling. This reminded me of Kenneth Branagh's Henry V.
Oh, yeah.
In that battle scene was so visceral. This one was even more visceral than that, I think. So I gave it 10 out of 10 double
B's, out of 10.
Bolton Bites. Mm. What did you give it?
Well, Catfish, I'm not the big softy. I'm not won over by
That's
people
not what I heard.
Cheering. That was one time. No, I'm not won over by people applauding and laughing.
No, I know you hate people.
Right. These people, I keep everybody through Periscope. Nobody. I am going to give this episode.
What are you going to give it?
10, what I like to call triple T's.
Whoa.
Out of 10.
Triple T's?
Yeah, that's terrible throat traumas. We had a lot of people, whether it was what Grey Worm did to some of those slave masters.
Got it.
Or what happened to Ramsay. So actually, it could be a quadruple because we had three terrible throat traumas. Maybe more. I could be forgetting some.
Wow, so you gave it a 10 as well.
I normally hate Marine. Earlier, we were talking about, you know, what part of the show or the storyline are you sick of? And I am so over Marine. In this episode, I enjoyed Marine a lot. And so, yes, I was won over by the crowd. Yes, the laughing. Seeing this episode with hundreds of people in this auditorium.
Oh, my God.
It affected you. And even if the little finger denouement.
Yeah, sure. Deus Ex Machina,
right.
Littlefinger coming to save the day.
Right. It didn't bother me that was such a cliche. It was I was happy with it. Like, the crowd started clapping like crazy as soon as they saw Littlefinger and Sansa. They were really clapping
when
for Sansa.
When they saw the banners and people. Yeah, that was great. I mean, Marine was great tonight in every part of Marine. I mean, we're going to start off, but the beginning with Tyrion sort of being on edge and trying to explain himself all the way to what they did. And then when Yara came, Yara had a great line.
Oh, she did. Audience roared in this thing.
They roared at that line when she said, I think she said, I never demand anything, but I'm up for anything.
Right.
And considering they set it up beautifully with last week's.
Yes.
With Yara enjoying herself.
Right.
Yara enjoying herself at the brothel.
Right, in Volantis. Yeah, so they set that up great. We should say right at the top that this episode, we got it. You know, we were tough on last week's episode. We love
it. We were.
But as we always say, we want to hear from you, our double L's.
Double L's?
We want you to tweet out your opinion.
Wait, hold on. You didn't answer my question.
Yeah.
I said double L's.
Loyal listeners?
Yeah, okay, all right, good.
We want you to tweet out your thoughts. We want to tweet out your reviews. Just use hashtag Joffrey of Podcasts, or you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/doublepodcasts. That's the word double, the letter P, the word podcast, facebook.com/doublepodcasts. If you loved it, we want to hear it. If you were down on it, and we actually had somebody here in Periscope, give it only like 5.5.
That was Grumpy Gobert living up to his name or her name.
But we respect everybody's opinion. Everybody,
we do, absolutely.
We want everybody to join in the conversation.
We're just two guys.
Right, we are. Two guys.
We're just two double Gs.
Double Gs.
Gorgeous guys.
Everybody who's not on Periscope knows that's true.
Someone asked in the Periscope chat
if
this director could direct the rest of the episodes. I'm sure we would love him to if he had, as I was reading earlier this week, that for the fight, besides the people on screen, they had about 600 people off screen working. They put a lot of resources into that battle.
Right.
That was amazing. And the fact that even though I knew that battle was coming, I could still enjoy what was happening in Marine. It wasn't like, okay, we're just waiting around for the battle to come. I was really super excited about what happened in Marine.
That's a great point, yeah. What I was going to say, Catfish, is this director, I'm going to mispronounce his name.
Okay, it's go ahead, do it.
Miguel Sapochnik.
Okay, that sounds
it's
right.
It's close.
Sapochnik, sure.
He directed Hard Home from last season, and everybody loved that Hard Home battle so much. I think the producers, Weiss and Benioff, loved that battle so much they brought him back. And he did a great job, but I think he even did a great job with the non-battle scenes.
Absolutely.
Whether it was because the script was better, there were a lot of laughs in this episode. And
I was wondering, I found a lot of things funny, and the crowd did too. It wasn't like there was raucous laughter, but whenever I laughed, there were other people laughing too. So you know, we've had a lot of disagreements about whether the parts that were, you
meant
know, meant to be funny. I enjoyed them just for the fact that we needed something, and you were like, it's not good enough. And tonight, I think you found the humorous parts to be good enough.
Oh, without question. Whether I was affected, and I definitely was by that incredible audience, I'm saying that I had this bias. But I did laugh. I'm going to give it credit. I totally, totally laughed.
All right.
So everybody knows. Let's jump into this episode. Everybody knows about it. Oh, forgive me. But I should mention that if you go to iTunes, the U.S. iTunes store, we are so close. We are single digits away from getting 100 written iTunes reviews.
Wow.
In the USA iTunes store.
And what happens when we get 100?
When we get 100, we may quit begging. We've been begging for these reviews ever since we started.
I doubt it. I doubt that we will quit begging.
That's true. But you will also, everybody who's written an iTunes review or a Stitcher review or tweeted out hashtag Joffrey Podcast or liked the Facebook page, you're all entered to win the wonderful prizes we're going to be giving away next week, and they are incredible.
Now, just a quick before we start the podcast, we do have a request from one of our Periscope live show participants.
Come on, that's a lot.
And he says, haven't seen the app, please no spoilers. Okay, so we're going to attempt to do a review of this episode without any spoilers, and that's an absolute lie.
Here's a non-spoiler review.
Yeah.
While many of the story beats were completely predictable, it was incredibly enjoyable.
I love it. Double E.
Double E.
Incredibly enjoyable.
Incredibly. All right, so everybody knows they're sick of me breaking down the opening credits. But today, when we review the opening credits, I want to kind of bring everybody into this special for your consideration.
Bring us all in, okay?
Because as these credits went up, it's funny, they list all the anchors. They list Peter Dinklage, Kit Harington. They list Emilia Clarke, Sophie Turner, Liam Cunningham, everybody. There weren't any claps for the actors, but then suddenly, about halfway through the credits, some of the people behind the scenes.
It was great. There was applause for random people, and most of the time when they were applauding, there was multiple names up on the screen, so we had no idea who they were applauding, but they were applauding for their friends.
Yeah, their producer friends.
God bless them.
There was a huge cheer for the visual effects guys, because a lot of the people who do the visual effects, I believe are probably in Los Angeles.
Right, exactly.
It was huge. It was real funny. And I, of course, was very cold. I noted that there were no specific applause the two times George R.R. Martin's name came up, which is silly. You know, he wasn't there. His friends weren't there. But I still...
However, they did give great applause to the creators of the television show.
Yeah, well, one of them was there. Yeah, Weiss was there.
Okay.
Right, so, you know.
No, he was in Atlanta, he said.
No, that's Benioff was in
Atlanta. Oh, okay.
No editing at all.
Nobody knows.
All right.
It's you and I.
All right, so let's do all the Marine stuff first. And you would think, like
let's
you said,
Marine.
Let's get it out of the way. Let's get to the battle. But this Marine stuff started great. We both occasionally talk about the effects. And I thought this opening effect shot, I really liked it. I thought it was great. We're seeing it on a gigantic screen. And so you would think something stand up. There were some that maybe didn't pass your muster.
When they were on the cliff facing off against the Masters, that background shot did not look great on the big screen.
No, but this opening segment where they're firing the ball into Marine from these ships and lighting it on fire.
And
these were incredible
effects. When the ball
came
out, and it came out, when we followed the fireballs, you were so excited.
Right.
You were like, whoa!
I think I was like, yeah, all right!
Yeah. You just right off the bat, you really got into this.
I did. I thought that following the ball was a great shot. And then we get into Daenerys versus Evil Uncle Tyrion. Evil Uncle Tyrion, he's maybe not the most effective spin doctor. He's like, Marine's doing great. Make Marine great again.
Everything's fabulous. Look, it's rising. It's rising. It's on the. He's making Marine great again.
Right. The markets, wonderful. Visit the markets when visiting Marine anytime you want. This was hilarious.
Except during fireball days.
I'm going to give it up to Uncle Tyrion for this. Mm-hmm. He said that the success of Marine is why they were attacking. And his argument
that is a great...
It's great spin.
It's a great spin.
He's like, but is it correct spin? I was going to give him credit that there's a bit of truth. All the best spin, all the best lies have hidden a truth of them. The best spin has some truth in it. And so he's saying the reason why these people are attacking Marine, they're attacking Marine because if you show that people are fine, that cities in this part of the world can be fine without slave masters, there won't be any more slaves.
Exactly. He does make a great point. I'm glad you finally agree with me that Tyrion did the right thing by making a deal with these guys and holding them off until the dragons could show up. Right. Grumpy Gobert says they hate our freedom.
They hate us for our freedom. I also loved somebody earlier tweeted out here on the Periscope. They said, we're having a great fire sale here at the market. So Daenerys goes into a bit of what they like to call Mad Queen Daenerys.
And you know what? I thought
yeah.
She's got it completely right. Because remember, I always wanted her to get her ass in gear and not worry about everything.
Yeah.
And so I even thought she was going to wipe out those cities on her way here. But Tyrion's got a different plan. And once I find out what it is, I'm thinking two things.
Yeah.
One, he's right.
Ooh.
Shocking.
Okay.
Number two, she has learned to listen. So she's got a plan, but she'll listen to a reasonable alternative.
Right. I think a lot of people thought what we're seeing here in Periscope, that we would see Mad Queen Dany. And she was going to be like, you know what, I'm going to level their cities to dust. But as you're saying, she listened and she agreed to this meeting.
But what's also interesting here is I think there was an added part to this scene, which is foreshadowing.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Well, it's foreshadowing the use of wildfire in King's Landing. And so there was an extra part to that scene that I thought they were cluing us in on.
Certainly possible. So what you're talking about is when Tyrion's trying to say, don't be Mad Queen Daenerys, don't burn cities to the ground. Your father, the reason why my brother killed him is because he was going to burn everybody in King's Landing, all of his subjects, to the ground. He planted wildfire underneath the castle. I forget where else
in the Sept?
Definitely in the Sept. That was the last one.
Right. And so that's what I thought was interesting, was because last week we had a question, where is this wildfire? And I think it got answered by Tyrion here tonight.
Right. He was trying to, it's like, where is that?
Look, if you want to know where it is, I'll tell you the places you shouldn't look.
Right. While I thought he was doing a great thing, I did wonder about, remember, he's like, and that's why my brother killed your dad. You know, I thought if there was any way he could have left out the death part. You know, he's like, hold on, your father had all this stuff, and so he was going to do bad things. If he could have left out the part, and that's when my brother shoved a sword into your dad's back.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's good to have full disclosure. He's getting everything out now. It's very funny.
Right.
Also, there's some funny bits here as he's trying to explain how things are going. The room itself is being shelled. So, hey, things are going great.
Well, what you would wonder is why did Daenerys not immediately go and burn all those ships is one of the things I wonder.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is I think later on she says she's going to use some of those ships. So then the question is, what we didn't really get the answer to is, how many ships did she need to burn before everybody else said, okay, we quit?
Right.
Just like the deal that was offered to the guards of the masters, where they said,
right,
here are your two choices. And in another very funny, almost Monty Python-esque bit, they make their decision by getting out of there fast.
Right. So the third place, I want to say, I was confused about that.
Do
we
it.
Didn't mention the
Tell
third
me.
Place
Break
in King's
down.
Landing, apparently where wildfire is hidden underneath, is the guild halls. So the pyromancers was a guild. I think they explained back in season two when we met the pyromancers. And so
this is why you never share a guild hall with pyromancers, okay? Or
I got a great rent there. Yeah. Come on. The Shriners,
no.
We're going to have our guild right next to the Pyromancer. What could go wrong?
Exactly. Unless it's the Water Brigade Guild. That would be the only guild that I would think would want to be close to the Pyromancers.
So Daenerys...
he says, well, let's do this deal.
Right.
And then the next thing we see, without any further discussion, which I like, is right there.
We cut straight to it.
And there is a funny turnaround when we find out they're there to discuss surrender.
Right. The three the three wise masters, you would say. One was from Yung Kai for sure. We saw him back in season three. The other one is the slaver who bought and sold Jorah and Tyrion last season in season five. And one we're going to assume is from Astapor, which we haven't seen. And so they are their terms that they are trying to talk Daenerys into. He's like, you know, I offered you boats before. Now you're going to walk out on your foot. This
These
guy
doesn't seem like great terms. No, where's the little bit of the carrot? It's all stick and no carrot here.
Right. They're even saying, hey, you know what? This translator, Missandei, who you got from my good boy Krasnys, you're giving us to her. I mean, these guys, they really somehow thought that they had the upper hand. This is the silliest thing I've ever heard.
Now, quick question from a Periscope. Fort Worth Vikes fan wants to know which one of them brought frankincense.
Well, soon many were incensed.
They were two of them were murdered.
Right. Two of them won't need to worry about their incisors anymore. So, yeah, it was a great twist. I thought Daenerys was really powerful in this scene because she didn't say she was so quiet the whole time. Tyrion was really kind of the one doing the talking, and then who comes but Drogon, the world's the only dragon we know its name in the show.
True story.
And so, what did you think? These are always tricky effects, blending live people with digital effects.
I thought it was great until she kind of climbed up, and that was a little wonky. But the thing that I'm a little confused about is how these guys seem a little shocked. They shouldn't be shocked. They know she has dragons. Do you think they're shocked because Drogon is so big?
That has to be it. When he saw this slave master from Yung Kai, when he saw the dragons, he was scared of them back in season three, but they were, you know, big dog size. Now they are, what animal would you
no,
describe?
No, I think you have to say they're jumbo jet size now.
I think they're more like a shuttle. You take the shuttle?
Oh, okay, sure.
And in Catfish, I'm going to disagree with you. I think these effects are as good as I think they could ever be. And on the big screen, I kind of like them. And we had the debate a while ago, Catfish.
Okay.
You were like, I thought when Tyrion released them from their chains, they were out flying around. This episode proved they weren't flying around,
yeah.
I told you.
So, gee, thanks a lot, Tyrion, for letting us not go. I mean, he made a big deal out of letting them go, and then they were like, oh, thanks, even though they were trapped in there. That part was a little confusing to me. I wouldn't be happy if I'd just been unchained.
Right, and so as the dragons break out, you know, they're breaking out of their room, and we fly over the city. We see a very small group of Sons of the Harpy slaughtering innocent people. Whether they were slaughtering people who were dressed like the masters, they were slaughtering people who looked like former slaves.
I don't think they were all innocent, because there was one woman there that I know for sure overcharged me at the market.
Okay. All right. And so they turn around, and out come every living Dothraki that ever was.
True. And then even some that are just doubled.
Right. And
it's the same Dothraki. They put him in the back.
And Daario 2.0, he gets probably the first awesome bit of violence. He decapitates somebody from a horse. Pretty good, Daario 2.0.
Gotta like
Shout
that
out to you,
when
buddy.
He's got the sickle.
Right. And what I thought was pretty good is when the dragons are flying over the boats, it looked like the boats, they at least tried. They're like, hey, let's see if we can fire some stuff at the dragons. That's what it read to me. Like, not they stopped firing at the city. They said, let's hit some of these. But
these are not the most precise weapons.
No, these trebuchet fireballs. Yeah. No, I don't think so either. But if you're one of the guys on this boat, you're like, I signed up because I heard this great song about how it was, you know, fun to be in the Navy. And now you're toast. You're roasted on a boat, baby.
Well, that's because Daenerys used the secret word, which is Drakkar. That's a very nice men's. I'm going to just use the men's perfume. Let's just pretend.
So you're not giving it the female Drakkaris. You're giving it the Drakkar.
Drakkar.
Noir Drakkar.
Drakkar. It smells nice and it burns.
Strong enough for a man, but meant to burn boats.
Drakkar.
And so this flame show, awesome, great action. Way to start an episode with action. Call me crazy. I go back to season 3, episode 5 was one of my favorite episodes. And the only
did you give it a 10?
Ooh, we'll have to go back and listen.
I was surprised you gave it a 10 tonight. I don't think we've ever, either one of us, given an episode a 10. I think I've given a 9.5 to Hard Home.
Well, you weren't. Yeah, you missed last year's Hard Home episode, so it's hard to remember. But
in my head.
let me say the thing about season 3 episode 5, it was when the Hound, it started with the Hound fight in his trial by combat where he beat Beric Dondarrion, and that was the only bit of action in it. But I think it's, I wish the show would start with a bit of action more often to really kind of get the juices, the pulse
like
going.
We did last week with our podcast. We started off with some action.
We sure did. So now, Catfish, do you want to give it up for my boy Grey Worm, who has a really kind of a great negotiating tactic?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. That he says, it's almost like he's doing that old game that they do on the streets.
Right.
With the ball.
Right.
The
find
cups.
The ball underneath the three cups.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So there's only one ball, and that is it's one person who's going to stay alive. And this part was also, again, funny.
Yeah, it was great. He was like, okay, one of you guys has to die. You broke the rules of our agreement. The queen's kind of insistent on this. One of you guys has to...
No, they should have been smarter than this. Because the whole point of this group is like an Occupy Wall Street. It's like a Bernie Sanders thing. And so they said, no, take the poor guy who's not one of us.
Right.
Dumb move.
So Rosdahl, he's the guy we met in season 3 from Young Kai, he pushes forward the slave master who sold Tyrion last year, and he is begging. And we should give a slight behind-the-scenes trick. This actor, Enzo Celente, who's an English actor who was in a great BBC 7-part miniseries last year called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Which we did a podcast about.
We did a podcast about. Yeah, go to iTunes, Stitcher, look for Lost Hope podcast. It was about this great Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast, and he was a great actor on that miniseries, and it was fun that, guess what, he got spared.
That's right, and pointed out by one of our double L's loyal listeners at Cold Bus, saying Childer Mass was spared. That's why we love our listeners, because they know more than I do.
Always. Yeah, Childer Mass was his character name on Jonathan Strange, Mr. Norrell. So he drops down to his knees, and I love what Grey Worm did here. He started what I called the terrible throat trauma, and it was a real smooth move.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Grey Worm, you know, this unsullied army man, has had any action this year. And so he did a great job. This was awesome. And look, Childer Mass, this actor who plays the slave master, that is some great, I am crapping my pants acting right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, he doesn't seem sure that the action is completely over.
Do you think, now Daenerys is already sacked, let's ignore how awesome this scene is. Let's tackle this from close to a real world situation as possible. Daenerys has already sacked Astapor and Meereen and Young Kai, and they didn't learn their lesson then. Is this going to be the final lesson that, hey, tell your people what you saw here. Go back to your cities. No more slavery. Eat it.
Well, if they, and I'll say it because it's true, again, if they were concerned about the dragons seeing them but being shocked that they're much bigger, he's going to go back and tell them, oh boy, the babies have become big.
Yeah, double B, big babies. They have really, really grown. I still think it might be good for Daenerys to give him a flyover, don't you?
The other thing is, hopefully on his way out, if he lives, he'll also see the riders, and he'll have some more information to give them. It's not just dragons.
Right.
But we got some bad mofos coming your way.
Yes, really, really fun stuff in Meereen.
And Tyrion gives him a nice little pat. Hey, everything's going to be fine, except you may need to clean your trousers.
You're right. Yeah, not just your trousers. I think probably somehow.
Just everything.
Right. Everything that could leak, leaked. It was a great scene. So the next time we go to Meereen, the Greyjoy brother and sister combo, they have arrived.
Now let's talk about this just a little bit, because I had thought we were going to spend a little time, not too much time, having Daenerys come and conquer those other cities on her way back. Mm-hmm. But now, effectively, she has done that. The only question is, we know how people forget things quickly.
Right.
Presumably, she's going to be on her way soon.
Yeah.
And will they go, oh, well, we heard she left. So let's just go back. Or have they finally learned their lesson without her going in to kick ass in those other cities?
I don't know. That's why I was saying, if she could do a flyby and they could see these damn beasts up close again,
right,
let me say, when they see him at that size, they, oof. Oh, my Lord. You know, life is precious.
They're biggins.
So, when we cut back, Tyrion is browbeating Theon.
My God, he really is.
These guys, Tyrion has a long memory. These guys shared one scene together in season 1, episode 4. They had a scene together, and to be honest, there was a lot of back and forth. Yes, Theon made some height jokes about Tyrion, but Tyrion made some jokes about the Greyjoys. He's like, yeah, they burned our ships, but what happened to them then? They lost. Stupid rebellion. And then Tyrion was like, he threw the poor hostage ward Theon a coin. He's like, hey, have one on Raza and me, you poor bastard.
You know what's horrible is Tyrion goes through the litany of jokes that are not original that he hears over and over again. When is he going to finally finish that damn brothel joke?
We're never going to hear the brothel joke.
I want to hear it.
Even though, stay tuned, Double L's, we have a great listener submitted answer to that joke, which we're going to get to at the end of the podcast.
That is true. We will get through to that. But now we're going to have what is I thought was a delicious, delicious scene. I did think that the browbeating at the beginning was a little weird because they're coming and they're supplicating themselves.
Yeah.
And Tyrion, as sort of the consigliere, really shouldn't be doing it. We shouldn't be hitting them that hard. They don't need to remind them that they're weak. But what's good is Daenerys comes in, and she doesn't give him a hard time, doesn't give Tyrion a hard time, but she just is like, pretty much, okay, that's enough. Let's get to brass tacks.
Yeah, and one thing they really do, the director does, is he's shooting Tyrion low, so Tyrion looks big, and then he's shooting over Tyrion's shoulder back down at Theon. It's like, this is the big guy, Tyrion. Theon, you're the little guy. He was visually showing, hey, you little punk. You came to
Although
me.
I noted at one point, and I don't think it was the way he shot it, I think that Daenerys was still a step higher than Yara, but being a step higher was still shorter than Yara.
Yes, yeah, I noticed
so
that too when they shook hands at the end.
Tiny.
Yeah. Right. And so, Theon, let's talk about this. It's easy to forget that in the first season, Theon was a complete, he was a kind of a harmless, but he was a complete SOB jerk. He was a guy you didn't like the first season.
As a person who doesn't remember a lot, there's one thing and one thing only I will never forget about Theon.
Okay. So we saw him in the first season because he was a hostage / ward of the Starks. He was a little peon nothing. Then in the second season, he really did do some terrible things. Are you glad that Theon's owning up to it? He said, I didn't kill the Stark boys. I did something just as bad. I did worse things. I'm not fit to lead.
What's nice is that he was sort of a Bolton precursor.
Right.
We thought, oh, this guy's bad. And then we found out what bad really was. It was like feeding someone a little bit of drugs and then you give them more and more drugs to hook them. He was Bolton light.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, do you feel that Theon has come all the way back in redemption? Do you can now consider Theon like a good guy, or is he a bad guy still trying to repay these terrible debts?
I don't know whether I'd call him a guy, but I would say that that he has sort of come back. He has lost any sort of bravado or wise-assness. He's just here to support his sister.
Right.
And he's probably the one of the few people that I think has no ulterior motives or is leaving nothing unsaid. Everything he says, he believes. He's got no further schemes.
Okay, so how about this? Before Yara had this really great exchange with Daenerys, were you a Yara fan? Did you like Yara Greyjoy? Were you happy to see the Greyjoys?
I loved Yara from the minute that Theon tried to hit on her and she was like, back off. And then she didn't even tell him that she was his sister until later. I've always loved Yara. And Yara and I, we have some things in common.
We like
it when the show goes to brothels.
We got to teach you how to say brothel, but that's fine.
Brothel.
Okay, so there was there are just so many great crackling. You always talk about you love crackling dialogue.
Yes,
there were so many great dialogue moments in this. Daenerys is like, have the Iron Islands ever had a queen? And she's like, just as often as the Seven Kingdoms have, sucker.
And they're smiling at each other. They know where they are. They're on the same page. And Theon basically has to let them know, yeah, I'm not in charge.
Right. You don't have to talk to me.
Yeah. Just go look at her. Then they explain kind of what happened.
Right, with their uncle Euron.
Right. And then that takes a moment to everyone. Everyone kind of looks around and is like, you know what? We all kind of had crappy fathers.
Happy Father's Day. You had a bad dad. I had a bad dad. Tyrion had a bad dad. I wonder if they went to the... I wonder if she included the Unsullied guards who are in the background. We all have bad dads.
You know, though, only one of them here killed their dad.
Right. Evil Uncle Tyrion.
That's why he has the best Father's Day. Here's your Father's Day gift. An arrow in the gut while you're on the crapper.
Oh, man. So... let's get to it. The Greyjoys seemingly have joined Team Daenerys. Team Daenerys seems to be cool joining on their side. And Daenerys, if this doesn't convince people once and forever that she's not going to be mad Queen Daenerys, I don't know what is. She said, hey, all our fathers left things, made things worse in the world. We're going to make the world better.
Right. And now they also are smart, too, because Theon says, you know, our uncle is going to give you his ships.
And
she says, okay, well, why don't I take that? And he reminds them, well, what he's going to do in addition to that is he's going to bed you. And then once he's done getting what he wants from you, you're going to be dead. But then this is my favorite ever.
Let's hear it.
She says, you know, Tyrion's like, well, they're demanding a throne. And Yara says, I never demand, but I'm open to things. And
great
smirks at each other. And it was a nice setup that we saw Yara
a couple episodes ago.
So we know Yara likes the ladies. I don't really think that Daenerys is up for it, but I think Daenerys is done with pushy men. So whatever.
If she's done with pushy men, I got to be honest, Tyrion might not be long for this world.
Do you want to ship these two, Daenerys and Yara?
They've got great chemistry. I think they have better chemistry than Daenerys and Dario does.
They absolutely do.
Okay, yeah, what's going to be the ship name?
Dara's too easy.
Yenerys.
Denaria.
Yes, and somebody on Periscope is joking, we're going to ship them to Westeros with all those ships.
Yeah, what? And so she makes a good point, again, that Daenerys says, they're not demanding. They're not demanding, they're asking, and everyone else is free to ask. But then also Daenerys tells them another funny bit. She says, okay, no more marauding.
No more reaving.
No more doing any of that. And Yara says, but that's what we do.
Right. Yara is like the slave city people. They're like, hey, we do slaves. That's our culture. Fighting pits is our culture. We saw how that turned out. And so Yara's like, well, it's our culture. Can we at least have an Iron Islands Day parade?
The question, though, is, honestly, since that is what they do,
sure.
What are they just going to putter around in the bay around the Iron Islands?
Right.
What can they do?
They reeve and go what we would call Viking because they can't really grow anything on the Iron Islands.
Right. How are they going to get anything? I guess there's going to be some trade. What do they have at the Iron Islands? Fish?
Right. They certainly aren't going to have any more trees after Euron builds his 1,000 ships.
Right. What are they going to trade? Oh, you know what?
Well, they could be like UPS.
Shipbuilders.
They could also, hey, deliver your package from
Oh, that's great.
They'll go, we'll deliver your package from the Iron Islands to Marine in just 4 episodes.
There's 2 ways you can get something.
Yeah.
You can either get it from the Greyjoys.
Right.
Or you can do it by air if you want the dragons.
Right.
That's if it absolutely positively needs to be burned overnight.
That's right. Love it. So that's it for Marine. I have been the one who's been talking trash about Marine.
No, don't say it was just you. I've been so upset, not just with Marine, but with the whole storyline of Daenerys, that I thought there was too much time taken out for her to learn. And I think that's based on the books and also the show. Hey, we can't have Daenerys ready until everybody else is ready.
Ooh, but I want to get to something our good double L Matt Papa said in Periscope. He says, I'm glad that Essos is wrapping up. You know, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but in the next on Game of Thrones, they're still in Marine. They're it feels like it could be wrapping up, but until we see these people on these darn boats and they say they're going to Westeros, I don't think we can I'm not ready to count our chickens before they hatch. We're certainly going to be stuck here for one more episode.
Okay, but let's admit that Daenerys doesn't, we don't need to have her learn anything else. I was tired of her not learning the one thing she needed to learn.
Ooh, well, our good friend in Periscopes believes that Essos/Slaver's Bay won't be done until Euron gets there.
Good buddy BT-Mac-11.
Yeah, are we sure Euron is going to go? I mean, if he's going to build 1,000 ships, he's not getting there anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to have to go. They're going to take the ships and they're going to go to the Iron Islands. They are with their ships. They're going to start their mail service by picking up other ships and taking those ships to Westeros.
Right. I believe just because there's no way I think you can leave Euron on the sideline. I think Euron will make an appearance next week in episode 10, but there's absolutely no guarantee that Euron will actually ever get to Slaver's Bay.
Think we're going to see the quadruple E, as Matt Papa says?
Quadruple E?
Yeah, Euron's endless Essos excavation.
Right. He's actually going to Essos just for more trees. We're screwed here. All right, so it is time to get to the north. Ooh. It is time to get to the quote-unquote Battle of the Bastards. Catfish, what... I want to know, this episode is titled Battle of the Bastards. The preview was setting it up.
Okay.
Just as a general note, is this what you expected?
No. This is what I would have expected, I think I would have given the episode an 8.
Oh, okay.
The battle was so... It was a double B.
Double B.
Brutal battle.
It sure was.
It was the most brutal battle I have ever seen filmed before. And that is saying something because they really have stepped it up on this show. I mean, the colliding horses, the noise, Jon, I thought he was going to be smothered just by bodies. I mean, there were mounds of bodies. It was just so violent and visceral. I found myself holding my breath when Jon was underneath the, like, I need to breathe because I felt the being enclosed the way he did.
Oh, we have somebody in Periscope saying the best part of the whole battle was Jon rising and getting air out of there.
Yeah, and then Matt Papa said double D.
Double D.
Dueling Destriers. And Holly Humpence, this is what I was saying, is that Jon's POV scenes really put you in the moment. My God, I thought, sorry, at any moment, someone could swipe him with a sword. I mean, The disorientation he had and the blood and the mud, it was thrilling. It was thrilling.
I want to say, and so I want to be completely honest here, I wasn't sure, but there was this guy on Reddit who said he was an extra in this battle, and he said this is how it went down. And he said it last summer. And let me say, this guy was an extra on the show. He spoiled almost everything that actually happened.
See, this is why you've got to stop going on the internet, and not just for porn. You've got to stop spoiling yourself.
I'll only go on Twitter to hash out hashtag Joffrey Podcast or go to facebook.com/doublepodcast. But sure enough, this guy, so I knew every kind of beat. He was wrong about a couple of beats, but I knew every beat. And even knowing everything, I could still really enjoy it. Now, one of the things I always say is we had read the books, certainly the first three, so we knew a lot of the story beats, and we could still enjoy the show. So you still can enjoy it. But as someone just, you know, obviously this is just one man's opinion. But
a fight you don't really want spoiled because there's particular things that happen in it. So that's different than seeing plot unravel that you already know and that can kind of be satisfying to see it.
Well, this was one of the – I'll get to this point before we dive into all the North part.
Okay.
Is he said that Tormund killed small Jon Umber. And the – even though I had read this, even though this guy had tweeted this, and I had read about this months ago on Reddit, this show did such a good job of convincing me, oh, well, maybe he got this part wrong when Tormund was, you know, underneath the pile and really looked in trouble.
Right.
That I had doubt for a minute, and so I could still feel tension.
The only thing that I found fault with in the battle, and this is just the way they had set up, I guess they had to do it this way, was it seemed to me that any time that the giant could have done a stage dive and broken the wall.
Yeah.
If he had just kind of jumped onto the soldiers, he was so big.
Or if somehow he could have kicked. Yeah, well, there were a lot of things that I did.
That was the only thing that I thought, okay, this is a little silly. It seems not realistic. Of course, I've already accepted the fact that there's a giant in the world, so I guess that's unrealistic. But, yeah, some people are saying giant barrel roll. I thought giant stage dive. Just jump and land on those guys, and boom, you break the circle.
Well, okay. Now, listen, we're going to break down this battle. We, in Periscope, give us those responses. Tweet at us. If you're not in Periscope, go to our Facebook page. Let's hear it. But let's start at the very beginning of the North scene. There was a treaty between, you know, the two sides met. Before the big battle, it was the Boltons with the Carr Stark and evil Small John Umber with Team Stark. And, of course, I pointed out, as soon as we saw her in the background, the Triple L.
Triple L?
Little Lady Lyanna Mormont
was
there. Oh, my God. She steals the show. In the theater, they roared when they had that close-up shot on her.
They roared when there was the close-up to her, and she's just stone-faced.
Oh, they did. So, if, you know what, one of the things, and I think Sansa... She could have told Jon about, hey, I did write this army. Maybe we should wait for them to show up. But Sansa gave some great advice, and I thought she had some great advice. But if Jon and Sansa had been willing to fight dirty, this is what I would have done. At this treaty, I would have had the giant come out and just kill all of them. Why not have one hiding in the trees somehow? Of course, how do you hide a giant?
Especially
but
if
these dumbasses come out on their horses for the peace treaty. I've gone completely, you know, who cares about the rules of battle?
Especially if Sansa was good, I should have told them earlier, hey, this guy is sneaky. However, if that had happened, we would have missed the entire battle. So that's not happening. But nice bit here where, again, they really make him, they make Ramsay so... horrible so that his death will be enjoyable. I mean, he really calls out Sansa.
Right.
I've missed you terribly. Oh, it's so... Oh, it's so gross. Oh,
let me say, as somebody in season 3, I thought there were way too many Ramsay tortures Theon / Reek scenes. I just thought there were way too many. And then at the beginning of this season, because the first 4 episodes begin, with Ramsay doing something, you know, just being a complete jerk. You know, he killed Osha in episode 4. The previous, in episode 2, he killed his father and he killed his mother-in-law and his stepmom and her daughter.
Right.
And so he had been just so terrible. I didn't want any more Ramsay scenes, but... I'm going to miss him. He does great in this episode. He does so great at being such an evil SOB that this actor, and I'm going to mispronounce his first name, Ian Rowan or something like that.
Okay.
He's a great actor. He can smirk like nobody else can smirk.
So bad. He's like, thank you for returning my wife. Oh, it's so delicious. And John says, so good. John's like, well, let's do this. Just mano a mano.
And there, I wanted to see how Ramsay would handle that. I thought he didn't handle it the best. You know, and even when he couldn't come up with a quippy comeback, and he's like, yeah, this Jon Snow, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I heard you're good. That sounds like I wouldn't win, so I'm not down for that. No, Jon says something that I thought would have repercussions, but didn't.
Yeah.
When he said, I wonder how your men will feel when they find out that you wouldn't fight. And so that would have been nice
That's
to
good.
See
yeah,
I would have something, loved... but we didn't.
Yeah, because he said that, even though this isn't what the guy on Reddit said, I thought when Ramsay went and hid in Winterfell, his men might have turned on him like, you moron. I want to point out that people on Periscope, a couple, I saw Red Star do it. I think Berzuti did it, wrote this as well, and they said that, now that Ramsay's dead, we need a human villain, you know, a human terrible person. And I think, book spoiler, I think this is true of the books and the show, that Euron Greyjoy is set up. You know, we started with Tommen being the evil villain.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say that you must think that Tommen's going to die because it's so clear that anybody who tries to take Joffrey's place just by not being Joffrey becomes the hugest villain.
Right. And so... Sansa kind of destroys the negotiations. Did you think she had a right move when she said, look, you're going to die tomorrow? Did you think that was a good move, or should they have stayed there and come up with something else?
Well, I think that's good. I think she gives away her strength by leaving after that. I think she should just say, Yeah, you're going to die tomorrow and just sit there and smile at them.
Right. Well, what theoretically pushes her over the edge is she's like, prove that you have our brother Rick on. And Ramsey has Small John Umber throw out Shaggy Dog's head. And, oh, that dead dire wolves piss off the audience more than seemingly dead humans do. And so
let's talk about, as we were standing in line for this event tonight,
yeah,
there was somebody who had a t-shirt on that had all the direwolves' names.
Right.
And we briefly considered me taking a video of you going up to that guy's shirt and taking a big marker and just marking off
right.
the direwolves.
I was going to cross through Greywind, cross
nope.
through Lady,
gone.
Cross through Shaggy Dog, excuse me, cross through Summer. Yeah, it would have been, I would have destroyed his shirt, but made it accurate.
Now, we did have a good question here.
Yeah.
Fort Worth Vikes fan says, was 1-1 Joffrey? And I would have thought so before tonight, but
yeah.
we saw him die. So obviously, 1-1 is not Joffrey. But he was a good candidate.
He went out like Joffrey. He's like, you are going to have to fire a lot of arrows if you're going to take me down.
Right, and another listener wonders, maybe Joffrey's at Bear Island, just chilling.
You know, he sees Triple L Little Lady Lyanna, and he's like, "This, you know, Sansa wasn't a strong wife. Let's get this kid." But Sansa storms off, and I thought it was, you know, it was a powerful line in the audience. The audience actually clapped a lot, which I wasn't so sure for.
They did.
When she storms off, you're going to die tomorrow, sleep well. But so many times in this episode, when Sansa asks like a badass, what's funny is Ramsay smiles and he's like, yeah, that's the girl. That's my new Miranda. I want her as my wife.
So good. She's saucy and I like it.
Right. And Ramsay talks trash. He talks trash to Jon, and once, you know, Sansa leaves, he starts talking trash to the other men there. He's like, which of your parts? All.
My dogs will eat first. Your eyes. Your balls, because they know they like they're called Rocky Mountain oysters. Well, now what's interesting here,
he
though,
didn't
is,
mention that the dogs would eat their throats first.
apparently,
yeah,
there was a little bit of talk when they got back to camp, because later on Sansa says you haven't fed your dogs in 7 days, but she'd already left by that point. So
uh-oh.
Apparently there might have been a little. What did you hear? What he said about the dogs? Holy cow, that's crazy!
Right, a thing that normally would bother me because of the books paint such a picture is they film this in Northern Ireland in August and September, so there isn't snow on the ground when it's winter here in the north.
Right.
And so behind the scenes they said it rained so much they had to bring gravel and rocks out for this whole field so that the horses could have some traction when they were running, because it was so
wow.
muddy and dangerous for the horses.
So we see a military meeting, a planning meeting.
Right.
And then there's some funny bits here with Tormund when Jon has to explain to him what some military terms
right.
mean.
He's like, you know, Stannis did that pincer
envelopment,
move on you.
Pincer.
Right. right.
And Tormund is like, no comprehendo.
Well, no, the audience roared with laughter.
Yeah, when he said, they won't be able to hit from the side. Oh, yeah, that's good. It wouldn't be like that.
and this actor, our double W, the Wyndham Wizard,
yeah.
he really killed it with some jokes in
yeah,
this episode.
Yeah, it was some good jokes. They must have, the people from Wyndham must have seen some previews of this, because I would have never thought he could be funny before this. But he's very funny in the Wyndham Wizard.
Yeah, commercials. Yeah.
But now we're going to have to, we have some gifts.
Right.
We have the Wyndham Wizard beard
right.
mask, and also the iPad. We're going to have to like put some blood on that before we
sure.
send him to out.
Oh, for sure. And what was interesting in this meeting with Davos is Davos, Jon, and Tormund, you know, the men, the brilliant men, right, ladies? The brilliant men are like, you know, if we can do this, this, and this, then we'll have Ramsay surrounded on three sides, not realizing that once again, Ramsay does what Ramsay does. Ramsay had them surrounded pretty much on every side by either a very effective and, I believe, probably accurate shield wall representation.
Shield wall was great.
And, of course, a mound of bodies.
I've seen shield walls before.
Yeah.
But only sort of from the front. I haven't seen them kind of surround and the way they poke out and then go forward.
Oh, yeah.
That was so visceral. It was amazing. But what I thought was a little funny here was,
yeah.
is that Sansa says, "No, you don't know how sneaky he is. You got to do something different." And Jon's like what? And she says, "Well, like something different."
Well,
that he doesn't, he's not going to think of.
That's exactly.
Thanks for the heads up.
That's exactly right. Well, that's why I wanted John to do. I mean, John needed to think outside the box. John needed to somehow sneak 1-1 behind their forces. You know what I mean? John did not have a great plan.
The problem is,
we can't even tell what John's plan is.
We can't even tell how good John's plan would have been,
right?
Because he got totally baited and suckered into it. And even Sir Knuckles was like, "Oh, please do not do this,
right?
Please no."
And Sansa called it. She's like, "He's not going to fall into your trap, John. You're going to fall into his. He likes to play with people." And so John says, you know, boy, I fought north of the wall. I fought worse than Ramsay, because he's thinking the Night King and the zombies.
Yeah.
But they don't really have so much a strategy as so much as everyone dies.
Here we come. Right. We're big, we're angry, and we smell. Now, I don't want to give Sansa a hard time here because, you know, she's not versed in military stuff. All she knows is that Ramsay is a sneaky SOB.
Right.
So you've just got to do something different. That's all she knows she can tell him. And, you know, it's obviously the fight needed to play out the way it played out because it was amazing.
Right.
So it's just interesting here. I wonder if he's going to listen to her more, or she's going to be upset with him because of the way this fight went off.
Right.
She's got her own problems to deal with now that Littlefinger has come to her aid. Obviously, he thinks that there's a certain bill due to him.
Right. And in that letter, which HBO put out on one of their various sites, you can read the letter, and it says something like, "Hey, you know, what reward you will be rewarded if you come up and save us." But I thought it was real interesting. Sansa was also, dare I say it, a bit cold-blooded. She was writing Rickon off. Did you like that?
She was just being practical. She was being practical. She said exactly the right thing. She said, listen, he is the biggest threat. And we all know that the North is still loyal.
That's true. That's
to the Starks.
True.
Right. So she says very smartly, listen, we got to just write Rickon off.
Oh, that was cold, though. That was cold. And so I was very... I didn't like them
fighting. There's nothing they can do differently anyway.
Right.
You know, it's not like, okay, their plan was to sneak into the castle and take Rickon. They're going to have to fight no matter what.
But this will be very interesting going forward. She saw how Jon fought. Maybe he certainly didn't have a great strategy from what we could tell. We saw all these things. But he fought, and his men fought very hard for him. Is she now going to demand that he be a kind of lieutenant to her? Let's have some better calls. Is he going to go north to the wall to fight the real battle? Not that this battle wasn't a real battle, but you know what I mean?
I'm not even sure.
It feels like there's still going to be some roughness between them when they should be becoming closer after this great victory.
Honestly, I'm not even sure that he's the one who's going to be in charge. Most of his guys are dead.
Ugh.
Littlefinger came to save the day.
Right.
She owes Littlefinger something. John may not even be in charge anymore. So that could be a lot of tension between them.
Oh, well, John, you know, Littlefinger's forces are truly Little Robin Aaron's forces. And I don't think we saw him in this episode. And so they'd either be, there's no way they would go over to John. There's no way that would happen. They're either going to be under Littlefinger / Little Robin Aaron's control, or somehow Sansa convinces them
now,
to get on
theirs. One of our loyal listeners made a good point, and
then
she's saying we don't have enough people. Why do you think she didn't say, tell him, I've got some help coming? Why is that a secret? It seems like, again, I have the same problem with this that I had with Hodor, in that basically if forces had arrived earlier, then we wouldn't have needed a sacrifice from some characters.
For listeners who didn't maybe remember or hear this episode, Catfish was screaming at Uncle Benjen. He's like, why didn't you show up earlier?
If he shows up 2.5 minutes earlier, we don't need Hodor to hold the door.
That's preposterous. I'm not even going to answer that. And I would say that, are we sure that Littlefinger sent a raven back to Sansa that she could get? You know, she's out kind of in the middle of nowhere at this camp. She's not like at a castle where a raven would be trained to fly. How in the world is she going to get a raven back from Littlefinger saying, I'm coming?
But it's not even mentioned that she...
Right. Why didn't she say, I wrote a letter?
Advice. Well, look, he says, again, he gives the same Donald Rumsfeld advice.
Right.
We go to war with the army we have, not the army we want. And she doesn't say, I put out a raven to get more help. Let's see if they're going to come. Why do we have to do it now?
Right.
She could have at least said that. Why do you think she didn't say it?
I think she didn't say it. Why the, I'm going to give you two reasons. One is the stone cold drama for the show. The show has to have the cavalry come in to save the
day. Right, but there's got to be a better excuse than for the show.
No, well, yes, there is. What I'm saying is for the show, if she says, hey, there's a chance an army's coming, then the battle would never, they would wait until Littlefinger's forces arrive. So.
Right.
Yada, yada, yada. The second reason is I think we're supposed to, as show watchers, we're supposed to buy that scene where Littlefinger told her, John has an army fighting for him. You need an army fighting for you. And maybe there is...
It's hard for us to buy that because we don't believe anything Littlefinger says.
That is completely true. But I think we're supposed to believe that Sansa believes it in some ways. Like, this is...
Well, then I think we needed to see that more because, honestly, the only reason you can buy is it was for the show to make it more dramatic, and that's not enough.
I completely understand. After Jon and Sansa have their kind of battle in the planning tent, we have a really fun little moment here between
Tormund
and Davos. And it almost makes me think, well, if they're trying to build some chemistry between these two guys, maybe that means they're going to be around for a while. Why would you build chemistry between two guys if one's about to, die in a battle, one's about to die in the next episode?
Well, as I said, usually when we have a nice, happy moment between people, that's the last moment we have before they get their throat hacked out.
Tormund, not only did he not understand the pincer move in battle, when Davos said Stannis had his own demons, Davos is like, Tormund's seen actual demons. He's seen the White Walker army, so he's like...
Right, right. You have to be very careful with any colorful phrases you use around Tormund. He is going to take you stone cold seriously.
Right. And I thought that was a great moment between them. Good laugh once again. And it's nice to see that the Team Stark commanders, who really have not really had any time together before... are bonding.
Right. But they're like, kings suck.
Yeah, I actually...
But you know what also sucks, according to Tormund?
Yeah.
That watered-down crap that you drink, Sir Knuckles.
Right, sour goat's milk that's fermented. It's the best, baby.
Ouch. That does not sound pleasant.
So we have been waiting, theoretically, all season 6 long, for Davos to find out to what happened to Princess Shireen Baratheon. And many people predicted it, actually, from the preseason trailer I did, where you saw him standing by that kind of pyre, or that burnt pyre, and remember that he had carved the thing. And so we all predicted this, yet it's still, I find, a very powerful moment.
That was a double R moment.
Double R?
Ruh-roh.
It sure was. When he finds that burnt stag, and it's actually, I think, a beautiful shot, because his cape billows a bit in the wind, and then you also see kind of sunrise in the background to let you know that the dawn has broken. I thought that was a greatly composed shot. It's all done non-verbally, so this is one of those meanings you have to have previously on Game of Thrones, hopefully, to maybe remember.
They did it beautifully. Now, the one scene that I was a little confused about, only confused what it was trying to achieve, mm-hmm. was the scene between Jon and Melisandre.
I thought it was a great moment to have Jon Snow say, hey, if I fall on this, don't bring me back. I thought that was a great scene. And
do you think that means he's a quitter? He's a quitter, right?
He is.
Shouldn't you want to come back as much as you possibly can to
avenge? I do. Melisandre, I want to come back.
The double M is a quitter.
The mopey mopers and Jon Snow.
Mopey mopers and Jon Snow.
And Melisandre, she had some advice that was a bit more direct than, Sansa's advice is do something different. Melisandre, she said, don't lose.
She said, don't lose. I thought she could have added one thing here that would have made the scene nice.
What do you mean?
He said, what's going on here? I don't understand. And she essentially says, who knows why the Lord of Light brought you back? You could just have a small part to play.
Right.
It could be just they could need you for tomorrow. I thought the last bit of like cheering up that you do someone for a battle is after you say basically you could just be fodder for tomorrow. You should also might say, but he also might have a larger plan for you. How about we end on an upbeat note? Like maybe you're more than just battle food.
Let me say this. She's been wrong an awful lot. She's playing it safe. She said she'd get any bets. Don't get anybody's hopes up. What's the point of this?
Now, there is one quick moment they have later, since we're only going to see Melisandre one more time here.
Yeah.
She's not billowing or doing anything crazy.
She doesn't fight.
She's hanging back in
quitter.
The tent. One great moment,
yeah.
And you have to remember stuff in the past, and thankfully I remembered this,
yeah.
Was when they show her in Winterfell, and the banners unfurl, and I flash back to her saying, I saw myself in Winterfell.
On the battlements of Winterfell.
On the battlements of Winterfell. And she's got a quick smirk. They do it. It's very short, but for me,
yeah.
It was very satisfying.
Oh, it definitely was. What's interesting, though, is she also said she saw Bolton banners burning. I don't know if we saw any of those happen in this episode. Did they burn them, actually? I don't remember.
I think they flayed them and burned them upside down.
One thing that got a big laugh in the auditorium where John is like, you know, well, dear Lord, what kind of Lord is this? And she goes, the one we have, you know, just like he's just like
just
he
like
said,
the army.
Right. You go to war with the army you have. You go to pray with the Lord you have. So Melisandre, we're going to talk about that in a bit. But I certainly you should worry for her safety. Davos does just like Uncle Tyrion. He doesn't forget. Everybody has long memories.
And I had always thought that Melisandre was like the big Lord of Light, witch, proponent,
priestess. Yeah.
But it turns out that they're filthy with him in Essos. So she's not completely vital. She's not like top dog. She can be replaced with someone who hasn't burned little girls.
Yeah. I want to say the one thing that I think people may like Melisandre more about is, once again, she's not saying these are my powers. She's always, everything she's done, even I imagine the shadow demon that killed evil usurper Uncle Renly.
Right.
Theoretically, we're supposed to take that is the, you know, the Lord is all her power. So she's not power hungry so much as she's Lord crazy.
There was one other question, though.
Yeah.
When he said, she's like, I don't know why the Lord had me bring you back. Wasn't it Davos's idea? She wasn't like praying and all of a sudden it came to her. It was Davos going, hey, do something. You could do something here, right? You got something you can do. Do it. So do you think maybe Davos is the Lord? Sir Knuckles is the Lord of Light?
At this point, anybody's like,
if so, he's
you
be
are,
one
we're all,
pissed Lord of Light.
Everybody look underneath your chair. Everybody's
Fort Worth Vikes fan says that Melisandre is just an assistant manager.
No, assistant Ouch. To the manager.
She's the assistant to the manager. Okay.
So let's get to these battle setup shots. There's almost not too much other than just saying what's happening on air. There's not too much commentary you can give other than this was awesome. This, all those extras they talk about, it's on the screen. You know how they always talk about the budget for this film was blank million, and sometimes you're like, well, where'd all the money go?
Yeah.
You see it all in the screen.
It's all there. It is all there. And again, WW11 is there.
WW Wyndham Wizard, Tormund is there.
All the W's are there.
And so let's just get to it. Let's pour one out. He got brought back for season 6. They didn't allow him to speak once. Let's pour one out for the youngest Stark brother, Rickon Stark.
Now, I want to say this, and I'm dating myself, but if someone loves funny movies, they should go and rent or somehow watch a movie called The In-Laws.
The original In-Laws.
The original In-Laws with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin, and it's very funny. Very funny action movie. And at one point, someone is shooting at Alan Arkin, who's sort of just an everyday guy. Peter Falk is this haphazard special agent. Funnily enough, it sort of has the same kind of setup as a movie that opened this weekend called Central Intelligence. So in that movie, Alan Arkin is being shot at, and Peter Falk yells at him, "Serpentine, serpentine." So he's weaving in and out so that he can't get shot. And this is one thing that I just wanted to yell at the screen to Rickon, "Serpentine, for God's sakes."
I wanted Rickon, I almost yelled at the screen, "Rickon, hide behind one of those burning crosses. He's not going to be able to shoot you through an arrow if you're hiding behind a big piece of wood."
Good point.
So I got out the shame bells. Does everybody hear them?
What did I do?
No, it's for me. When the preseason trailer came up, I predicted that these flayed people on these crosses,
okay,
they would be people we know. But theoretically, Ramsey's just like, well, we got to have some flayed men out. We got any prisoners?
Mm-hmm. Nah. No, I think he was like, is there someone who didn't clean their room today? Basically, anybody on report.
Right.
Just got flayed.
And so this, let's give it up. A powerful moment.
It was nice when he came out, and I thought, okay, he's pulling Rickon, and Rickon is dead already.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what the deal was. And so he pulls him out, and he's got one last game to play.
Right. This was just brutal. Why didn't Rickon? I think Rickon could have laid down. I can't imagine an archer so good that he could
hit
a body.
Well, he was good enough to hit him. He was good enough to hit him while he was on the run from very far away. In fact,
got to be wind too. Yeah.
I love the second arrow because Ramsey turns to his guy and he's like, whatever. Like the second one, he's not even looking because he knows he can hit him with the third one. So yes, hiding behind something would be good, but hiding on the ground wouldn't have done it. If he can get him while he's on the move, even though he is stupidly running in a straight line,
yeah,
then he could get him on the ground.
Oh, for sure. And this actor, like I said, this poor actor, they brought him back, didn't give him any lines. He only appears in two episodes, and then he dies a really tragic death. They do a lot of kind of fake outs, like he brings Rickon up and pulls out the knife, and then he cuts him free rather than slitting his throat or something. And Ramsey misses. I assume we're supposed to take it that Ramsey was missing on purpose until
With the second one that he looks away. It's a no-look shot he does with the second one.
Right.
So good.
One
of our listeners said something good, and they said, you know, they're never going to get that smell out of Winterfell.
Which particular?
The smell of the burning men.
Oh.
You know what? You're just going to have to knock it down and start over, just like they did with the Riviera in Vegas.
Right. And so this is tragic what happens to poor Rickon. John is in deep dew because the arrows could kill him real quick. You know, they could be leaderless real quick. But should the army have charged this, if somehow the army could have held back, is this when whatever plan John, Tormund, and Davos came up with, is this when it all goes to hell?
It was shot to hell. Here was the thing. If, as we saw in last week, that a guy who is the lord and leader can be captured for years, and then he shows up and you listen to him, for sure you're going to listen to your guy on the field of battle, even if it's different than the plan that you started out with.
Yeah.
Obviously, even though he's the bastard, they're going to follow him anyway.
Right. Oh, so painful, because Ramsay shoots off an arrow, it misses. But then we think, okay, Rickon trips over it, and we think, oh, okay, he's all right.
John's coming toward him on the horse.
Right. We had somebody write in Periscope that this is awesome direction. But it's not just direction. It's editing. It's everything. And this death is so tragic. It's pointless. It's just that Ramsay's a mean SOB. He wanted just Jon Snow out there in line of his archers.
I wasn't thinking that it was tragic because, like Sansa, I thought Rickon is dead.
As soon as he's with Ramsay,
there's
dead.
No way. Yeah, okay. Rickon's dead. He plays his one last game, and John stupidly falls for it. And I think he's learned now that fighting the wildlings is not like fighting in Westeros.
Right. And so Tormund is begging John not to go charging after this SOB, but John is filled with emotion. He's about emotion, not brains. He's very Stark-like in that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, sure enough, Tormund gathers his men, and once again, why isn't 1-1 like the point? One-one took a lot of arrows. There's no reason why 1-1 just couldn't have done everything.
We're just going to have to ignore 1-1. Again, he was like a magic bullet that they couldn't fire.
Right.
Because
He's too powerful, you're saying?
He could have staged, he could have easily taken a few arrows and busted through the shield wall. There's just no doubt about it. So he was a magic bullet that couldn't be fired tonight.
Right, and so the army charges
in. We needed the magic bullet of Baelish. The double B.
Double B.
Baelish bullet.
Baelish bullet. You know, there's just not much to talk about. Just wonderful direction. I'm not usually...
Well, I mean, the moment was John is standing there...
As everybody's charging.
With his sword up, and we think he's just going to get... We don't know. We know he's going to have to win, but I thought, God, maybe he will lose. And then the collision of horses. Every time
that was
there
great. Was that
horses
great.
Colliding... It was the sound, the noise, you could feel it in your bones. It was just thrilling.
And on a giant screen like we were lucky enough to see. Oof. Just incredible. Yeah,
this is the way they came in the end and just stomped the shield wall. That was actually quite funny when they did it one at a time. I mean, they were like a hot knife through butter.
Right. What's funny is HBO, a couple of days before this episode came out, they showed this picture of John, you know, holding his sword against these horses charging. And everybody was like, boy, Jon Snow, his brains didn't come back when he brought back from the dead. What does he think he's doing as this force was charging for him? And even though in this moment I figured it out, okay, his forces are going to come in.
But the way it shot,
it looks so great.
He's just, and for any person to be standing alone there while horses are clashing, you just don't think it is going to work out for him.
Right. Now, Ramsay, what did you think of Ramsay? He's had his cavalry charge, and yet he's still telling his archers, okay, archers, fire in there. That's your men, Ramsay. Those are your friggin' horses. Horses are valuable.
That is why on Sunday, June 18th,
yeah,
it was better to be an archer than a cavalier.
Right. This was just a mess. I kind of thought this incredible mountain of bodies appeared way too quick. But in this, you just can describe it. People, you know, they've seen it. We don't need to describe it. This was just an awesome, epic battle. So was there any point, like, in this that really stood out to you where you thought, okay, this person's dead? Like, did you think John could die?
I actually thought, oh my goodness, maybe John could die. And you know what I thought? I was very upset when I thought John died the first time in the books and also on the show, although I thought the show was going to revive him by that point.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, if John dies today, I would be okay with that. I wouldn't be as hurt because this was a meaningful fight.
Yeah, this was a heroic end. And just so many great moments. There was the one where John is having a sword fight with a guy, and you literally see a horse rider ride him down, and then this moment later, a horse is bearing down on John. John to the back of John. The Bolton soldier is raising his axe, and then somebody takes him out. Oh,
there were a lot of collisions here. This is after watching this. The next time I ride a horse,
yeah,
I'm going to demand. Some sort of air packaging. I need to ride in, like, bubble wrap.
Right. And so, to be honest, why didn't Ramsay just keep... Ramsay's already won at this point. He hasn't even done the shield wall. Why not just keep firing? At a certain point, maybe you run out of arrows. Why go with the shield wall? At a certain point, you have won, brother.
I know, but the shield wall is just an extra... We're talking about a guy who... was looking for people who maybe didn't behave too well so that he could have some flayed men up. I mean, this guy goes the extra yard. He does. I think in a fight, you just got to go and kill him the whole time. Holly Humpen says because he's sadistic.
Right. I'm looking for logic when he's just
sadistic.
Because he could have stayed behind the Winterfell walls and none of this battle would have happened.
I think it's just because he's thorough. Now, BT Mac 11 says, "Why didn't someone give 1-1 a damn weapon? Cut down a tree again."
Yeah, that is a great point.
1-1 is 1-1 is a magic bullet that could not be fired tonight. Otherwise, he would have taken over everything.
I got to give it up to he's on the wrong side, but I thought the Small John's thing where he was like, "Who owns the North? Who owns the North? Who owns the North?" I thought that was a good battle cry. I thought that was good. It certainly got his forces charged up and ready to go.
I agree. I mean, this was this with the shield wall was just, I felt like I was in there. And then when it, when John almost got trampled and he couldn't breathe because he was covered by bodies, I thought that was amazing. And then when I thought Tormund, I thought this was the end of the line for Tormund.
Oh, I like I said, I did. And so this was just a great battle sequence. Once again, if Lord Karstark bites it in this, I lost track of him. I mean, they're all, dare I say, they're all goateed / bearded Northern Islanders. It's hard to tell them apart, but incredible. And so yeah, it all leads up to the moment where, well, actually, I guess it leads up to the moment where Jon is suffocating. Tormund is trying to fight, and Tormund's actually getting his butt kicked by the small Jon Umber. And all hope is lost. This is the darkest moment. It's always darkest before the dawn.
You know what? Honestly, this was, for me, this was like the darkest moment after the darkest moment. I mean, they really, I thought they did a good job of making things seem hopeless and then making things seem even more hopeless to me.
Yeah.
So
they needed to. There was no way that they could win this. In 1-1, I loved it. I loved that the Tormund said, hey, let's try to break these lines. But it's tough to break a line. If you actually look at this scene, it's they've got, the Boltons had two shield walls. They had a shield wall, and then behind it, they had a backup shield. So if you broke past the first wall, somebody could, hopefully, you know, yeah, in the shield wall, you got to fill in real quick. You can't have any space between those shields.
Yeah, and what I like is they had this was like an amphitheater shield wall, right, and then the back wall was a body wall.
Right, a mound of bodies, and they're not just going to use that. Actually,
honestly, you know, 1-1 could have picked up five guys at a time and just pulled them right out. So we had to 1-1 had to just not be fully powered tonight.
Somebody in Periscope asks, what is the fallout for two great northern houses, the Karstarks and the Umbers?
They used to be great no more.
Well, there may be people back at their individual castles, but they are the lowest of the low. They are going to have to, if anybody's back, if there are any Karstarks alive back at the Carhold, if there are any Umbers alive back at Last Hearth, they are really, I don't know how in the world.
If they don't fight,
yeah,
but just remain neutral, how much trouble are they in? Obviously, if they fought, they had to all be smote.
Boy, that is...
But if they remained neutral and just didn't pitch in, will you just kill the king until the next one up best behave?
That is a great question.
You need
maybe
more
a great
people.
Answer. We had somebody in Periscope say, well, give their, you know, strip them of their house and give it to some of the wildlings. Give Tormund a keep.
Oh, yeah, Tormund. What? Tormund? We'll call Tormund Karstark.
Well, I don't know if you suddenly give him their... Tormund,
yes,
you also get their last name.
Yes, he gets the last name.
But...
And whatever he wants.
Well, once again, even though this was a great decisive battle and victory, in some ways I tend to think this sets up even more crazy stakes next week because... You need, whoever survived this, you got to get north of the wall. Because if you're in Winterfell and somehow the Night's King gets south of the wall and he revives all these freaking zombie bodies, bodies.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it,
yeah,
it's not the smell of the flayed bodies that they're not going to be able to get at Winterfell. It's going to be all these decomposing bodies. I mean, they're going to have to light these guys on fire.
Oh, yeah, and it's...
Otherwise, it's just going to be a mess.
Right, to give them any sort of proper burial for this many people?
No, you can't. You're going to poison... It's just going to be horrific. Yeah, everyone is saying just burn them all.
They're saying the Mad King's line, burn them all!
Burn them all!
So, Tormund...
If only we had just a touch of wildfire.
When Tormund was really deep in trouble, he pulled a move that his girlfriend Brienne did. He went for the ear. He bit, or maybe he bit the juggler. It was so kind of shaky and so kind of crazy. I don't know what he bit off of the small Jon Umber, but he got a good bite. Right, he got some good.
Before he died, he was referred to as the even smaller Jon Umber.
Yeah. And so, let me say this again. Even if I hadn't read this guy on Reddit's thing, I think the arrival of the forces of the Vale. We all knew it was going to happen. It was a Deus Machina, as they say.
Yes.
It was a, I called it a denouement, the descending action of the battle. But the audience went crazy. They cheered mainly because this shot is framed on, hey, there's Sansa. They cheered like there was no tomorrow.
Oh, God, when they saw the look on Sansa's face and then the look on Ramsay's face.
Because she looks so powerful.
Good. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I am okay with this.
Yeah.
Because it was set up.
It was set up.
That this was, they were outnumbered. And then when Ramsay suckered John into even giving up on the plan that maybe wasn't so great, but at least it was a plan to help ameliorate some of the numbers problems.
Right.
When basically they just gave up everything, they definitely needed some help, for sure.
Yeah, and Holly Huntpants on Periscope, she wrote what I said is true. When the cavalry of the Knights of the Vale, when they went through the Bolton Shield Wall, that was awesome.
And then they came on the other side, too. They were like a hot knife.
Awesome.
A hot knife through butter, as I said. And then there's the smirking. The only thing I ever wondered in how they did this in medieval times is when you come in, especially when you're covered in mud, the whole thing, you can imagine there's got to be some people who fall to friendly fire, right? I mean,
you got to
think some of the wildlings got torn up underneath.
In that craziness, I was sure John or a wildling were going to kill each other because there's no way in that insanity
you
could
tell
know.
Who's who.
No way you could tell who's on what side. And so Ramsay runs. What do you think, Catfish? Did Ramsay, the evil villain, did he get the death we all wanted, the death we all needed, the death we all expected? Are you happy with Ramsay's death? Because Ramsay actually took out 1-1. We're to assume that that was Ramsay's arrow that went in 1-1's eye and was the fatal blow.
Well, I was surprised that they got there so fast. Because
1-1 got there real fast. You know, he takes big steps.
Ramsay was on a horse, and the rest of them were running. And he's like, don't worry, it's going to take them a while to get here. Oh, they're here. And it wasn't just the three of them. There was a bunch of people who got there.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I would say 1-1, I was joking, but it's also true. He takes big steps. He got there soon enough.
I wanted, after John was punching Ramsay, I wanted him...
You wanted Ghost to come in and eat him?
No. I wanted Sansa to directly kill him. Now, even though I was a little disappointed by that, it more than made up for the way he actually died.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think as much as we would have wanted that, I think we're supposed to take from it that Sansa is not Arya. She's not an actual murderer. She may become powerful and, dare I say it, a bit more like Cersei, where she'll all order somebody to be killed.
Got it.
But she is not an actual... She's not going to swing the sword. The person who sent it swings the sword.
It would have been satisfying for her to just grab a little knife, though, and then just finish him off. But it was poetic justice the way he went.
It was complete.
Now, she probably doesn't know...
Right.
Do you think she knows how Ramsay ascended to the head of the Bolton clan?
No, I don't think there's any way she could know that.
But nevertheless, it is one of his favorite ways of taking care of people. So at least she knows that in some way this is poetic justice.
We saw Ramsay in season 4. He was hunting one of the with Miranda, one of the girls that he had his crazy three ways with his dogs, and he let the dogs maul her. We saw Ramsay sick his dogs on Yara after she tried to rescue Theon.
Right.
And so, you know what? Ramsay... I think a lot of people predicted this. It's what a lot of people wanted to see. They wanted to see him fed to his own dogs. They wanted him to get a taste of his own medicine. And Ramsay, you know, I appreciate that John is brave and charged him with this.
Yeah, no, that was cool. And then I thought he was going to finish him off. I thought they were actually going to fight. Of course, we know that Ramsay has no facility with...
No. Anything but a bow and arrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He's good with a knife when the person's not expecting it.
Right.
Oh. And each one of these punches John gave him were for the audience. You know, this was the audience saying,
God,
okay, this is for
just
me.
Thrilled. Yes, exactly.
And even, once again, Ramsay, I think he liked Sansa, that Sansa was taking such pleasure. He said, now you're my Miranda 2.0. That's what I thought.
Now, why do you think John stopped? It's just a show thing? He
looks over at Sansa, who is kind of sort of making a face like, okay, that's enough. And so.
Yeah, that's enough. By enough, we mean too gentle. Would you stop kissing him with your fist?
Now, the next on Game of Thrones spoils this. But even though we have this great victory, I suddenly become very worried for Melisandre. I worry that Davos is going to kill her. And I want to point out, you know how you brought up the thing that Melisandre had foreshadowed about the banner, Bolton banners falling and her walking the ramparts. I remember that Melisandre, back in season 3, Melisandre, mm-hmm. when she picked up Gendry, she met Arya and she told Arya, you know, these eyes are going to kill a lot of people and we will meet again. So I hope the show is going to honor that somehow, so therefore Davos can't kill Melisandre. But it sure looks like, even though he won the battle, he wants to kill her. You know what I mean? This sets up another interesting dynamic that I think we're going to see next week.
Right. Well, we did see, again, it's, I don't know if people don't watch the next Dawn, I always like to see what's happening in it. And it's clear that Davos is not going to hold that information back the way Sansa held some right. information back from Jon. And lots of information.
And Davos, right. So we'll talk about that next week. I want to get too much out of it. So we get to the end. I was unsure how much they were going to show about the kennel scene. You know, I thought it might end with just the dogs licking him, but no, the show wanted everybody to see this.
Yeah, it pretty much looked like the first one kind of bit his jaw off.
Yeah, it was all.
It was very nasty. He lost control, his buddies. You know, I have a dog, and if I didn't feed him for 7 days, even though he's the sweetest, most gentle Labrador,
yeah.
I would not be confident around him.
Oh yeah, so it was jaw to jaw. I called it a throat trauma because I thought he went there first, but pretty Ooh. Much everywhere on Ramsay's body Ooh. Is a trauma right now.
Yeah.
And Sansa, did she, dare I say it, and maybe this is a stupid thing to say, did she enjoy it too much? Because as she's walking away, she has a smile that you. Smile that she's won.
I didn't see
it's one
it
thing
as,
to won, but this is.
I didn't see it. It wasn't like a great smile. It was more just satisfied. I think it's someone said they called it surf and turf, catfish and steak. I think it was more. She put that behind her. She didn't think it was going to happen, and it's like, wow, things really worked out for me. Great.
Ramsay had a real creepy thing. He's like, I'm a part of you now. Oh.
That was interesting. And because of her interaction with him, her personality did change. I don't think she's heartless. I don't think that she has, say, for example, like a stone heart. But I do think that she has the strength that she needs to continue. She hasn't shown any vicious tendencies yet. But we'll see. I don't think so. Although yeah. the way I believe the show is going to end, as far as who sits on the Iron Throne, would mean that something else would happen with Sansa.
Oh, I don't know if there's going to be an Iron Throne at the end. I've become more and more convinced that vision that
they're going to melt it and sell it off.
The vision Daenerys and Bran have had about the throne room pretty much destroyed in the snow.
Okay,
if the castle is destroyed, what are you going to do?
Well, I guess I mean who is in charge of things.
Right.
Well, I don't think she's going to be one of the... Spoiler alert, I think two people are going to be in charge in the end, and neither one of them is Sansa.
All right. So, Catfish, we both were gangbusters. 10 out of 10 about
like
this
anymore.
Episode.
Because it was 10 out of 10.
Is there anything left to say?
This episode was... thrilling. It was breathtaking. It was triumphant in many ways. And it managed, knowing that it was going to be so brutal, it managed to throw in a lot of humor.
Oh, it certainly did.
Now, there is one good point that our listener, BT Max, says every show without Joffrey is a zero.
Oh, my
goodness. Guess we need to adjust it. On the Joffrey scale, this is 0 out of 10. But on the non-Joffrey scale, this is 10 out of 10. But good point, BT Mac.
No, great point, BT Mac. Okay, so nothing else we can say. You guys write us. Let us know. Tweet out the hashtag Jafria Podcast. We'll see it. We'll interact with you. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewordpodcast, facebook.com/PP Podcast. Gangbusters, great way to end this.
Now, before we go over some of the reviews from our double L's. Loyal listeners.
Yep.
Why don't we make some, you want to make some Better Call calls now?
Ooh, well, give me a question.
Okay, so we got Bran hanging out there.
Right.
What do you think is going to happen with Bran? Are we going to see Bran in episode 10? You think we'll see everybody in episode 10? We'll be a little bit of going on up here. We're going to see King's Landing. Presumably, we'll see Meereen, and then
I think we're going to see Uncle Euron wherever he is.
Right. Okay.
Obviously, we're going to see Sam again. We can't go a season with him being stealing that sword and nothing fall from it. I would say the only character we might not see at all, well, I'll throw out two. Number one is maybe there's a chance we don't see Arya. I don't believe that. I believe we will see Arya.
Oh, no, I think we'll see Arya. I hope we need to know. It's kind of confusing right now what Arya's plan is. We need to at least have an inkling of, before we go to next season, we need to know what Arya's plan is. We don't need to see her go towards it, but we just need to know what's in her head.
Okay. Well, I think we need to see that. And then I would also say that I made this prediction earlier. We may not see Sir Friendzone, Jorah. Where would he be? Where would he go? The show might be cool and show us where he went to quote-unquote solve his grayscale, but I think there's a small chance. I'd give it 30%.
Okay.
That the last time we saw him was the only time, you know, the last time we're going to see him this season.
And do you think we're going to have an interaction with Walder? Another question, will we see Jaime back at King's Landing?
Well, I don't want to, you know, if you watch the next on Game of Thrones, it explains that. So I don't want to.
Okay.
If people like watching that, check it out. If you want to be surprised where we next see Jaime, don't check out the next on Game of Thrones, even though we've kind of spoiled it at times.
Jaime and Brienne sitting in a tree, KISSING.
All right. So we're going to read the kind, the wonderful reviews people have been kind enough to give us on Stitcher and iTunes.
And I just want to refresh quick, because next Monday night, when we do the podcast and when we do our live Periscope of the final episode, we'll be giving away prizes, and there's four different ways in which you can get these prizes, and each one of the ways is one entry. So if you do all four different ways, you get four entries. The first one is to tweet at us. I am Catfish. You can hit me up at CGGman67.
I'm Bubba. You can reach me at Fit and Trim. That's FITTENTRIM, Fit and Trim. On Twitter.
Or you don't have to tweet at us. As long as you tweet with the hashtag Joffrey of Podcasts, you can do that. You can leave a review on Stitcher. We've been getting lots of Stitcher reviews, which is good.
Love it.
You can leave a review on iTunes, and we are now just a few iTunes reviews away from 100. We're trying to hit that. And the fourth and final way is you can go to our Facebook page, that facebook.com/PP, and then the word podcast, plural, and you can leave a comment there. We are giving away tons of prizes. We got some prizes. We got some prizes from the Wyndham Wizard, and as long as no one promises to turn me in, I've got some Emmy swag that we'll also be giving away.
Oh, yeah.
So we are happy to give it all away. So without further ado, let's read some of these new reviews. We begged and we got a bunch of reviews this week.
Here we go. We're going to go to Stitcher. A 5-star review from Maester David on Stitcher.
What?
It says, the Jafria Podcast promises the world and delivers. I'm a huge fan of almost all A Song of Ice and Fire related products, but this one won a special place in my heart when it revealed not only is His Grace King Joffrey not dead, but he is George R. R. Martin himself.
What?
Killing characters, saying F you to deadlines, and just being the best ruler he could be. This podcast definitely has Joff's AAA.
AAA?
Approved and anointed. Thank you so much, Maester David.
That is so good.
Why don't you read one, buddy?
All right, I'm going to read one from the iTunes, and this is, says, All Hail King Joffrey.
Heck yeah.
By Jolly Roger Rescue.
Woohoo.
five-star review says, greatest podcast of all. Bub and Catfish are hilarious in their devotion to the true King Joffrey. Love you guys.
Love it.
We love you. Hit us with another Stitcher review.
All right, so this one, everybody remember this. This is crazy. It's from TJOL67. Not 66.
Okay. Yeah!
A five-star review. It says, a humorous, well-informed Game of Thrones podcast. I've been told that my iTunes review was, quote, too sarcastic and cryptic. So here's another try.
What?
This is a funny, knowledgeable, and insightful Game of Thrones podcast. The occasional... We do need to do more. The occasional comedic sketches are wonderful. Hosts Bubba and Catfish take a critical approach to both the show and the books. I'm quite fearful that... the Joffrey of our world is going to take over in November. Uh-oh. An institute a reign of wonderfulness in the upcoming Double W? Wyndham Wizard invasion. Seems that's just a bunch of actors running around in front of giant green screens. I know that all podcast listening handbooks say that you should love both hosts equally, but I love Catfish more.
Yeah!
All right. Y'all's hard work in putting this show together is greatly appreciated by this double L. Thank you so much.
That
67,
is awesome.
67, not 66.
All right, and we have another review from iTunes. It says, great GOT podcast. This is by Skull Vikings 1973.
Thank you so
Five
much.
Five star. It says, these guys are great, irreverent but knowledgeable. There's plenty of meat, but they don't take themselves too seriously. When I came to the show, I looked for some fun content, and these guys are it. If you need a fix between episodes, come here. First of his name, first of our hearts, long live King Joffrey. Oh, amazing.
Thank you so much. You got any more other iTunes? I'll jump in and read some, but you read
some. So many. All right. So we have from one of our great double L's.
Double L's.
Stephanie Persephone.
Oh, yeah.
Says, a must listen. Five stars. All hail his grace, King Joffrey. As a double L.
Double L.
Loyal listener of this podcast. I would be remiss not to give it five stars. The hosts are GGs.
Double G's.
Great guys.
Hey.
And make me laugh every time.
We got from iTunes, Well Met as the title of her review.
Met.
By MP Zoll, five stars. Truly, the double W's.
WWs.
The Widow's Wail of Game of Thrones podcast. A tribute to the greatest LL.
Double L.
Lannister Lion to ever live.
Oh, yeah.
Double A.
Double A.
Awesome analysis. Double R.
Double R.
Reactionary rhetoric.
Whoa.
TPT.
Double T with a P in the middle.
Thought-provoking theorizing.
Oh, got
and
it.
Even a bit of double F.
Double F.
Flim flam.
True story.
What more of that than we need. King Joff would be proud to chop off our peasant heads.
Yes.
Keep up the good work, double Ds.
Double Ds.
Bing dongs. Thank you so much.
All right, and we've got one here, and the title is it's a double P.
Double P.
Pathetic podcasters.
Yeah, amen to that.
But it's five stars.
All right.
This is by our friend Sundial Photography.
Love it.
It says, next to good King Joffrey, these two double P's look like lovable losers. It's only in their impotent attempts to be like King Joffrey and spread his vision for a new world order that they redeem themselves. On a side note, the Honorable Donald Trump for Joffrey of the Year.
Oh, that's a good one. Here's, we got three more people. You've given us reviews. We're so close to 100. Keep them coming in.
We love it.
Everybody who gives us a review, even if it's not positive, entered in the contest. So we've got one here from... entitled Joff the Chain.
Joff the Chain. Gotta love it.
Five stars. It's this podcast reflects double F's.
Double F's.
In the one and almighty, long may he live, King Joffrey's name. Fantastically fabulous. Thank you so much.
That's from Divod, D-I-V-O-D-D. And we've got another double P here.
Double P?
Yeah, Pimpin' Pycelle.
The thing about podcasts
yeah,
is...
Jimmy Targaryen gives us a five-star review.
Thank you
he
so much.
He says he is a double L.
Double L.
Lazy listener.
Oh.
So I will let the double P speak for me.
Thank you.
The most noble child the gods ever put on this good earth. Just like this podcast.
Heck yeah. And we got one last in the U.S. iTunes store is from GR06. It's called Funny Satirical Take on the Game of Thrones Television Show. Five star. Boy, all these reviews.
I know.
We are so grateful, everybody. This says, I enjoy this funny satirical Game of Thrones Television Show review podcast. I have been a double L.
Double L?
Loyal listener for a few seasons now. Everybody give it a try. Boy, these have been great. We're going to go through all our international reviews next week, and we're going to read
man,
them
amazing.
Right before we give away the prizes. I'm excited.
Wow. Wow, that is amazing.
Catfish, we've gone ridiculously long on this episode.
We have, but it was a great episode.
So let's hear it. Who is your Joffrey of the Week?
My Joffrey of the Week, I'm just going to give him a name. It's kind of unnamed.
Let's hear
it. So I'm going to call him Ralph.
Ralph?
Yeah. Ralph is the name that I give to the dog that decided to sample Ramsay first. He, for being out there and knowing when you're hungry, you've just got to take care of business. Ralph. Yeah. Is my Joffrey of the week.
Ralph, you did a great job. Neck meat is always the best.
Delicious.
All right, I'm going to go to that city that I've always hated visiting, Marine.
Atlanta? Oh, sorry.
I was almost not going to edit this episode at all, you son of a bitch. All right, so we're going to go to Marine, and I'm going to give it up to somebody who, in the face of danger, was strong and silent. Who is that?
That would be Tyrion.
No, he spoke.
That would be Missandei and Day.
Exactly right. Like Joffrey, she only needed to speak, you know, when spoke. She only needed to speak. She didn't need to speak. Boy, I'm stumbling over my own words here. Shame bell for me. She didn't need to speak to
Got
show
it.
Her power. And she showed up just like Joffrey did in the fight. She led from behind where a real leader is.
Right.
And Missandei, my Ralph's supermarket friend, as I always say, go to our Facebook page and see my picture with her where I'm drunk and looking terrible, and she's looking as beautiful as she always does. So
true.
Salute to her. So, Catfish, we promised everybody the joke about the honeycomb and the brothel.
All right, let's give it to him. This is from our friend the Black Kraken, who has commented on our show before.
Oh, yeah.
He says his submission for the joke is, so I brought a jackass and a honeycomb to a brothel because I wanted some sex that was both sweet and great.
Right.
The honey worked with the sweetness, but the jackass didn't make anything great. He just yammered on about making Westeros great again.
Wait for the last. That was pretty good. That's a pretty good joke.
Not bad.
If you can follow it, that's a pretty good joke. Thumbs up, Black Kraken.
We give it to the Black Kraken and... later on this week, we will have a feedback episode. Okay. We've been doing two giant episodes a week of the Joffrey the podcast.
Tiring.
Because it's just too big. Joffrey, the greatness of Joffrey is too big to contain in one weekly podcast.
That's for sure.
We have to do two. So send us your feedback. Hit us up in the four different ways you can win the contest. And catch us next Monday night. Not Sunday, but next Monday night on
The Joffrey of Podcast.
Eat and Face Edition.